Patrick, mettila in mezzo Patrick, palla nostra, Suso, tira Alessio, Suso, tira, perché non tiriamo? Ma perché non tiriamo? Gol! Alessio Romagnoli! Il gol del capitano ancora l'ultimo, come Gilardino!
Hello everyone and welcome to another episode of the Sempre Milan podcast. There's just two of us again this week. I'm your host, Ollie Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher, and I'm joined by Anthony Torgrud.
Yeah, what's up, guys? We finally had enough of Madison, so we just got rid of him. I'm just kidding. He had prior arrangements, so he's not going to be here this week, but no worries. We still got a good episode for you. You can follow me on Twitter at Torgrud45.
Yeah, that's it. You know, I was out of action last week, and now Maddie's out of action this week, but Maddie's got a trip to the vets, hasn't he? So best of luck with that. And yeah, we've got an exciting episode. Obviously, it's kind of difficult when basically there's not been any signings, so to speak. Things are kind of moving along with the mercato now. You know, we've got a sporting director in place, we've got a manager in place, and all that kind of stuff. So there's various rumours developing. It's all getting a bit interesting on a couple of fronts, and obviously Gianpaolo's starting to get across to the management what kind of a squad that he wants. But I think the biggest story, certainly of today, we're recording this on the Monday as per usual, is all about San Siro and not about the actual squad itself. It seems like every mainstream media outlet that you would associate with football has gone wild with this story that San Siro is going to be demolished in 2022. And, you know, that, you know, therefore 2021-22 will be Milan and Inter's last season in the Stadio Giuseppe Meazza, which I suppose we better dive into, really, because I think those who are more informed on the situation will know that that absolutely isn't, you know, set in stone at all. And I've no idea why there's so many people who claim to be dead certain on that. But it seems that it all has stemmed once again from some quotes from Paolo Scaroni. Now, as we know, obviously, he sort of does this like once a month, does Scaroni. He comes out and he tells the media, yeah, we're still planning on building a new stadium shared with Inter. You know, he's done that regularly. And it's pretty much like political pressure, I would say. Obviously, the two clubs that currently occupy San Siro don't currently seem to see eye to eye with the Milan Council about what to do moving forward. I mean, AJ, I'll throw this to you now. First of all, you actually didn't really wake up that long ago, did you? And the first thing that you said was, oh, what's happening? We're knocking down San Siro. Yeah, go for it, man.
Yeah, no, I just I really don't have much information still. I just kind of what you told me when I mentioned that, because you're right. I it's early on where we're at right now. It's still morning for me, so I've only been up a couple hours. And first thing I saw was the Scaroni quotes, and it the way it was presented was like it was official. It was a done deal. This was like a real announcement. New stadium by 2023, and San Siro's getting, you know, torn down. And I was like, whoa, that's something to wake up to for sure. And then you mentioned there was like an Olympic announcement, which I honestly still haven't even seen. But so there's some Olympics are in Italy in some coming year then, and that's why the city's saying no. I don't know. I mean, I'll throw it back to you. I know you were ranting there, but I don't really have much information yet.
Yeah, I guess I'll carry on with the rant then. It's irresponsible from the media. It's basically the bottom line to all this. But Scaroni's quotes in full, and once again, he's done this regularly. This seems to be a regular thing from him. It has been since he was appointed president. Obviously, along with Inter, the kind of, what would you say, incorporation on this, releasing quotes to the media at kind of, you know, convenient times, just to put a little bit of pressure back on the city council. Because, like I said, they're not seeing eye to eye on things at the moment. But his quotes in full, were, we will build a new San Siro next to the one in the same area. The old one will be demolished and there will be new constructions in its place. So obviously, the plan, and I'm fairly sure we've actually discussed this on here before. The plan is that because San Siro, those of you who have visited or have looked at it sort of on an overhead map or whatever, will know that the actual stadium complex is absolutely huge, and there is enough space to literally build another, you know, slightly smaller San Siro next to the current one. And logistically, while all that's going on, you can still play games at the current San Siro. Then when it's done, we'll move over. Current San Siro will get demolished, and then they'll build whatever they want to build there. It might be a practice pitch, it could be anything like that. But yeah, it seems to be a common tactic now from leaders, both Milan and Inter, to sort of keep floating the idea of building a new stadium. I just got some quotes up here from February from Scaroni where he said, "We haven't presented a project yet, only planning. There isn't only the stadium, there are other things to address. We've presented an overall proposal, the two hypotheses being a new stadium or the modernisation of San Siro. Perhaps a new stadium would be easier, but there are also large-scale renovations like Anfield. We'll know more going forward." So he's even said in the past that the idea of building a new San Siro and knocking down the current version of it, so to speak, would be an option. But it seems to be today that people have decided to take his words literally and, like I say, massively blow this story out of proportion. There is absolutely nothing that has been agreed with the City Council, which it would have to be on a planning permission basis. And I think the most telling thing for me was that it was literally a few hours later. For those who don't know, basically, it was announced today that Milan and Cordisa are sort of the two, which isn't far away, are the two host areas or whatever for the 2026 Winter Olympics. So obviously that was a pretty big announcement. It's big for the city. You know, they put a lot into the bid, and delighted for that. And then the mayor of Milan, Giuseppe Sala, however you want to call him, gave a sort of response to what Scaroni had said earlier in the day. He came out and said, "The council owns San Siro. If Milan and Inter decide to build a stadium, I can only say two things. It'll take time, and then ultimately, we're the owners of the stadium." In the Milan-Cortina dossier, so obviously the plans for the Winter Olympics, "We guaranteed that in 2026, San Siro will still be open as usual. End of story." And then there's some more quotes about it, you know, about whatever happens after 2026 is still open for debate, but he wants to keep it open for the Winter Olympics, basically. So that seems to have pretty much put a plug in that, but of course that's not what everywhere is reporting, because that's not as good a news angle as the idea of one of the most iconic stadiums in football being reduced to rubble. I guess what it means is that it was kind of a direct response to exactly what Scaroni said, and it's like, well, you know, you and Inter can go and build your own stadium, but we're going to own the land, and therefore we'll own part of the stadium. And I think a lot of the motivation for building a new stadium is that we will have access to a bigger share of the revenue, because at the moment the council owns a decent chunk of San Siro, and the revenue is taken off Milan and Inter for match day sales, etc., as a result of that. So the idea of control is certainly a big factor in that. But this is not going to be a straightforward development. There's a feature on our site which is really good, which was actually done by a guest writer, who's pretty clued up on the stadium situation, called Rizal Faris. It's called "Everything You Need to Know About AC Milan's Complex Stadium Dilemma." Basically, just outlines what the plans are for both teams, what the plans are for the new stadium itself in terms of how many seats it will have, what that will mean for match day revenue in comparison with other teams that have built new stadiums. Juventus being the big recent example, particularly in Syria. Then there's also a bit about why the mayor is so opposed to a new stadium, which, just to touch on that briefly, is essentially because neither Milan and Inter are yet to deliver a final project to the city. They've not submitted official plans for what they want the stadium to look like. Also, he personally is more swayed towards the idea of renovating the current San Siro because a new one would be purpose-built for football, basically, whereas it's better for the city as a whole if the current San Siro stays open and is available for a wider range of events like concerts and, obviously, like I say, the Winter Olympics is coming in 2026.
Mm-hmm. Well, and that's really what it all comes down to, you know, is money. The city owns a San Siro. Why would they want one of the biggest money draws for the city to now be separate from them, you know? If Inter and Milan are taking the bulk shares of the profits, then it doesn't hurt the city, but it leaves them with less than they were getting currently. So, I mean, I don't see why they would want a new stadium. As far as the city's perspective, it makes no sense. They absolutely would rather renovate, but from the sporting side, for both Milan and Inter, it really doesn't make any sense to stay with the city. You know, I'm all for a new stadium. I think, you know, as iconic as San Siro is, the way modern football is going, you have to do these things. Like you mentioned, Juventus, we saw what it did for them, and recently with Tottenham, you know, they tore down White Hart Lane, which was, you know, very iconic in its own right, and now the new stadium, which I don't remember if they've announced name or what the name is. I can't remember.
I think at the moment they're just still calling it the Tottenham Hotspur Stadium.
Yeah.
The fans are calling it, like, White Hart Lane again, obviously. Yeah. But yeah.
But yeah, I mean, that's another example of a fantastic stadium. I mean, I've been to White Hart Lane, and it was great in itself, but the new stadium just looks like so much more than what it was previously, and I can only imagine what that would mean for the San Siro, given the current state of what it is. And how we can improve that in a new stadium. I wish we would do it separately from Inter and make them either stay in San Siro or get their own as well. I think we should branch out, and that way each team gets a full amount of profits, but I know that's quite the order to come up with, you know, have two stadiums being built at the same time. So I don't see that realistically happening, but I would prefer it.
Yeah, I mean, I've seen a lot of people as well kicking off about the idea of it being a 60,000-seat stadium and not an 80,000-seat stadium. I think, as we discussed the last time we touched on this, I think it might have actually been back in February when those last quotes came out from Scaroni. It only tends to get filled twice a season at most. Obviously, the derby and against Juve, we tend to fill it for both of those games. Mm-hmm. And obviously, for Inter, it's the same. So you can't really... You can't say that there is an absolute desperate need for a new stadium to be 80,000 when the average attendance of both clubs has been somewhere around 45,000 to 55,000 for sort of.
I want to say we were closer to 60 this last season.
Let me just quickly get up the. I did realise something. I probably shouldn't mention this, but I was looking up attendances recently, and Inter have had a higher average attendance at home than us for
What season? This was 18-19. So, okay. Inter was actually the top attendance in Serie A last season with an average of just shy of 59,000, and we were just shy of 55,000 in second place. Juventus had an average of 39,000. So, just a
big drop off.
It is a big drop off. So, I mean, you see the money that Juventus is getting from that, and they're pulling in almost 20,000 people less than we are. It makes no sense for us to not be taking the lion's share of profit out of the stadium, you know? We're obviously the ones putting asses in seats, and it makes sense to be profiting off that. Milan needs to. And Elliot will make it happen. I mean, that's their one goal, is to turn a profit on the club. So they're going to do everything they can to maximize potential here, and a new stadium is one of the key figures of doing that, in my opinion.
Yeah, that's exactly what I was going to say. This is clearly a strategy from the very top. You know, it does feel like we are owned by owners who are very adequate when it comes to the business side of I want to say football, but of course they don't really have a huge footballing background. But they basically know what works in business. And you know, the best way to generate funds, or the best way to sort of maximise your revenue, is to own the most share in something. That's just obviously basic business acumen. And this is a big thing for them. They'll see that we're currently getting shafted with the current the lease on San Siro or whatever it is. I mean, just to throw some figures in there, for the 2017-18 season, I don't believe the figures for the current season have been released yet, but for 17-18, Juve managed to get a total of 143 million in match day revenue, which was 36% of their total revenue. And Milan in 2017-18 managed 70.2. So that's less than half.
Yeah.
And that's a lot of money. That's a lot of money.
And we're bringing in almost double the amount of people that they are. I mean, now, one thing that is interesting, because I'm just looking at this thing right now, but it's also showing traveling fans, who has the most away fans. Mm-hmm. And Juventus is now at first as opposed to third. And it's almost the entire home crowd. It's 33,000 as opposed to their home crowd of 39. But then we're in second above Inter with 27,500. So our away fans are definitely much less than our home. But even then, I mean, we clearly have a big enough fan base to be filling a 60,000-seat stadium regularly, mm-hmm. and we would.
Yeah. I think the thing, I don't understand how, I'm guessing the way that away matches is calculated is sort of what were the average attendance when we were playing away in other teams' grounds.
Right.
So, for example, when we played Parma away, it might have been 25,000 total for that game. When we played Napoli away, it might have been 35,000. So the average from those two would have been 30,000, I guess. That's how it's calculated.
Speaking of Parma, they were the fourth highest for away attendance above Napoli and Roma.
I think everyone was just buzzing to see them back, to be fair.
I agree. So I was. Good. I was excited.
Yeah, but they only averaged 16,522 at home, so that's kind of interesting. But yeah.
It is, actually.
Well, so obviously Juve, again, this is for 2017-18, Juve getting 72 million more in matchday revenue from us over the than us over the course of a season, which, when you look back now at the sort of episode that we did on financial fair play, and we talked about how we're basically running at like a 90 million loss for the last year, it's funny. That almost makes it up.
That almost wipes that whole debt, you know?
Yeah, exactly. So you can see now how important this is for the club moving forward.
Mm-hmm.
Christ, don't get me wrong, it'll be an incredibly sad day when we eventually have to say goodbye to San Siro. And what I've said to all my friends who have sort of asked me about this and saying, you know, is it true? When do you think it'll get knocked down and stuff like that? The answer is we don't really know. But it's definitely not getting demolished in 2022, judging by what the mayor says. Now, some people have correctly pointed out that he might not actually even be the mayor in 2026. So, you know, it could be somebody else who comes in and says, "Nah, tear it down, and we'll have it. We'll have the opening ceremony at the new San Siro." You know, could even...
The only reason I don't think that would ever happen is because of the Olympics. If the Olympics is in 2026, there's no reason to take away a stadium, even if you're replacing it. You know, a straight swap, it doesn't make sense. You know, if they want to give us permission to build a new stadium in 2022, 2023. Then so be it. And then in 2026, they have an extra stadium for the games. And then afterwards, get rid of San Siro. That would be the most logical thing, in my opinion. But, you know, there's politics involved. So probably the worst decision is going to be made.
That's the bottom line, I think, from all of this sort of carnage that's come out today, really. In terms of it being dead certain that it's going to be knocked down and all that kind of stuff, is that it is all politics. It's a big game of cat and mouse between the leadership of the two clubs and the council, because obviously they're arguing about who should stump up the money if San Siro is going to be renovated again. You know, one side wants to reduce the capacity, the other doesn't. And then obviously from the club's point of view, the idea that the renovations that are needed on San Siro are so large that they'd have to play the games in another city, most likely, while it's all going on, which is an absolute nightmare. It could be one season, it could be two seasons, which isn't ideal at all, really, is it? So, there's so many obstacles in the way which is why it surprised me to see all the news talking about it as if it was done. You know, everything was signed. The two clubs haven't even put forward a project yet. They've not even put forward a design, a blueprint of how the new stadium will look. You know, until you get that, and then you get sort of the land approved, and then there's some kind of timescale which is approved. We're nowhere near what the media are making out, which I think is kind of irresponsible on their part. I understand it because obviously you got all these sort of football Twitter accounts and stuff that are looking for the likes and the retweets, you know, with crying faces saying such an iconic stadium's being demolished. What's your favourite memory from San Siro? Yeah, it's all like, I get it.
From some verified accounts too, you know, drawing in big numbers.
Yeah, exactly. It's traction, and I'd say quite a few of my friends have sort of been like, "Oh, I really need to get visiting sometime next season." I'm like, I don't understand that at all. It's not really the case. It's not as if anything's been announced about next season being our last season there.
And that was my first reaction too. Because I woke up, saw that, and immediately went to the Sempre Milan group chat, and I was like, "Well, we got to get the boys together and go to one last game." And then you chimed in, and you're like, no, basically, like this isn't happening, and so my blood was high as soon as I woke up on it,
which is part of the problem and why I would say it's irresponsible the way that it's been. I say exactly. Reported. I think it's just been picked up on by one who's taken it, you know, verbatim and thought and doesn't understand the context behind it, which is fine. You know, not everybody. Especially those who run accounts about everything to do with football, has time to read into the complex nature of the relationship between the two clubs and the city council. Not everybody is clued up on that or whatever, but just want to avert the panic, really. San Siro's not at risk for a while, I don't think. It might be possible that over the next 12 months, especially with light of this announcement about the Olympics, in the next 12 months, we might start to see some serious plans put forward.
Yeah.
All I know is we were meant to present a plan at the end of April, and we didn't. So, I mean, people forget as well that back in 2015, when Berlusconi was still in charge, we had stadium plans approved to build one near Casa Milan.
Mm-hmm. Personally, I really liked it. I know most people hated the design, but I thought it was cool.
Yeah, it was cool. But basically, what ended up happening with that is that, we had everything in place. The stadium design was all in place. The building plans themselves had been approved. However, when it came to purchasing the land near Casa Milan to build the stadium, the landowner sort of eventually got cold feet on it, basically. And nothing ended up happening, but also Milan were able to use that as leverage with the council to get some upgrades paid for on San Siro, which, to be honest, you won't really be able to see unless, you know, you've got a very, very well-trained eye. It kind of looks the same as the first time I went in 2014, so... it's complicated. And like I say, I think there'll be more developments on this, but basically don't be surprised if in 2 days' time you hear absolutely nothing about it again, because that's just been the way that it's been since the last few years recently. There's a comment that's made about San Siro to try and put pressure on the council, then everything goes quiet again. I agree with what you said earlier. I think this is an objective for Elliot, and they will hopefully find a beneficial agreement for everyone moving forward with Inter. I don't think it makes sense. I don't know about you. I don't think it makes sense to move into our own stadium. I think based on the sort of three solutions that have been proposed, us building a new stadium with Inter, even though we'd have to share with them again, seems like the best move.
I mean, it would cut all cost for Milan in half as far as the construction goes. Mm-hmm. So definitely that makes sense, but it also cuts all the profits in half, which, don't get me wrong, it still, I'm sure, would be a big increase from the San Siro profits. Obviously, I don't know what those numbers are, but it just, I feel like they wouldn't go forward with it unless it was an increase in profit. The only reason I would like our own is just so we could get 100% of the share as opposed to 50%. And it is what it is. I mean, I don't have quarrels one way or the other. That's just the way I would go about it is, put up a little bit more money so that we can make our own. And then ideally, if we could leave Inter in a, crumbling San Siro that the city's funding or hardly funding, taking away a lot of money from them, that does give us a little extra boost over them. But that's not a situation I foresee happening. It's just, me spewing garbage out of my mouth.
The thing that doesn't really make too much sense to me is the idea that we would revisit sort of building our own purpose-built stadium. I'm guessing we'd go back to that sort of Rio Fiero district of Milan, which is near Casa Milan, because of the extra costs that are involved on that. But then I also don't understand the idea. I think this might just be the mayor sort of being a bit power hungry and not really understanding what he's saying. But this idea that if we were to build a new stadium with Inter, the council would own that as well. I'm thinking it's to do with the land. So we'd have to purchase the land outright off the council in order to basically own 50% between us of, a new stadium that was to be built. But that's something to consider as well, because does it even really put us in a better position?
Exactly. If they're still owning it, then there's no reason to do it at all. You might as well just pay for the renovations. Because I know that's one of the issues is the city doesn't want to pay for the renovations. They want Milan and Inter to do it. But since we won't be getting any of the extra profit from that, then there's no reason for us to do it as a company, So that's why I don't. If we do get a new stadium, I doubt it's going to be in the same spot as San Siro, unless we could buy the land.
Yeah, that's true. It's interesting because Inter have never, well, essentially Milan owned the ground from 1926 until 1935, and then they sold basically the stadium to the local council, and the council has owned it since then. So the council's owned it for what? Oh, God, my maths isn't good. 74 years, is that?
I don't know. My math is probably
Yeah,
worse around there.
might be. Yeah, I think that sounds about right. 74 years. So basically, Inter have never even had a percentage share of the stadium in terms of the outright ownership of it. Obviously, they get their share of the match day revenues that come in, but in terms of the stadium ownership itself, Inter have never even owned a percentage of it, which sort of seems to suggest that we should be the ones who, yeah, no, it doesn't really work because we sold it back in 1935. Yeah, I don't really, yeah, there's nothing really else to add on that. Just watch this space, I guess. It's, yeah, Elliot seemed to fancy it. I think Inter have got their own sort of ambitions as well, and they seem to be pretty happy to lend their support to the idea of a new stadium. So we'll see, but I expect it to move slowly, basically, because there's so many politics and so many barriers in place that
Yeah.
that it's not going to be straightforward.
I think we'll definitely have an answer by the 22-23 season, but we won't have anything done by then. No way.
No, God, no. Which I guess is actually fairly indicative of what it's like to get stuff done in Italy. I'm not exactly sure, and I probably should have researched this before coming on. I'm not sure how the timeline went for Juve getting their own stadium, because obviously they played at the Stadio delle Alpi, and then the Torino Council pumped money into renovating the Olimpico, and then he went back to the Olimpico for about, well, I don't know, about 7 or 8 years, something like that. And then they built their own custom-built stadium. So I'd like to know at what point Juve started this whole process, because it might have been a 10-year process for them, and that might then sort of allow people, especially fans of Milan and Inter, to manage expectations and realize, look, there's no chance of us getting a new stadium within the next 5 years.
Right.
Yeah.
Unless
Rant
we went
about that.
the Tottenham route and just no money going elsewhere, no investment in players or anything, just a stadium for 2 seasons or whatever it was that they did, something like that, which in our position would be a terrible move. Obviously, Tottenham is at a point where they're consistently a Champions League side, so they could get away with that, but I don't think I don't think we could do that right now.
No, definitely not. No, it's impressive, you know, that Spurs have managed to do it. But it's interesting because Gazidis has kind of been through this with Arsenal, mm-hmm. you know, when they moved to the Emirates.
Right.
And the idea of working under the financial constraints of a new stadium and obviously everything that comes with it, because there's something else really interesting about how stadiums work in relation to financial fair play. Basically, say this stadium costs you $600 million. Obviously, it has to be declared as an expense, but it can be spread over 10 years or something like that. So it only will have you $60 million down on your balance sheet per year. That's how clubs tend to sort of bypass being massively in the red for one season. And obviously it can be spread longer than that if that's how long you're paying it over. You know, it a lot of the times the contracts with the builders, etc., can go over multiple years because nobody really wants to put $500 million up front into something. So there's a lot of different financial fair play discrepancies to do with building a new stadium, which are equally as difficult to work out as the situation with the council themselves. So, yeah, see what happens, I guess, really. But reports today about San Siro being demolished in 3 years' time, I would say, are very wide of the mark. Right, let's move on. Let's do some rumours then, shall we? Obviously, it was you and Maddie last time, and you sort of spoke about a few of the different rumours that we're knocking about with regards to new signings, player sales, all that kind of stuff. We've got a new sporting director in the period in between, but we all knew anyway that he was going to be coming in. It's Frederic Massara, who was a last at Roma and actually has a pretty good record in terms of signings when you look at them. But we'll go through chronologically, I guess, because that's the easiest and most straightforward way to do it. There was reports last week about Barcelona being interested in Alessio Romagnoli. So I'll throw this question to you. First of all, there's two questions, actually. Number one, what's his price? What would you say is a figure that is enough to bring you to the negotiating table? And number two, what kind of club do you see him leaving us for? Is it Barcelona, or could you see him going to Juve if they were serious?
Well, okay, is the first question what price for me personally, or that I believe the club would accept?
Both. Or at least start we'll here? Go with both. Okay.
All right, I think the club would listen to offers, I'd say greater than or equal to 45 million euros. I think that's as little as it would take for us, honestly. I just think we don't sell players for very much as is, and it's been a while since we've had a player that could get an offer that's big, so if we get one, I think that region isn't out of question. You know, you look at the other big name defenders that have moved recently, and obviously the one that comes to mind for everyone's probably Virgil van Dijk, which his price was inflated for Premier League and just wild as is, and I'm not saying Romagnoli's better than him, but I'd say they're definitely pretty close in caliber regardless of what people want to say. Mm-hmm. I think something that hurts us with prices are positioning the tables. You know, obviously that's not what you look at with individual players when you're trying to buy them, but it does make a difference, you know, with the media hype, because the media can create a bubble around a player and inflate his price tag, you know, and you see it with teams that make it decently far in the Champions League. All of a sudden, every single player they have, no matter what their skill level really is, they're inflated, everyone's exaggerated, excited about them, and the price tag is getting higher and higher. I mean, another example that's not quite the best comparison, but one that you can do statistically is you look at Cutrone's season, not this last season, but the season prior, and you look at Mbappe. I don't remember when it was in the season, but very late, where I'm talking like either March or April, Mbappe had one more goal than Cutrone, and there was really nothing else separating them statistically. I mean, Mbappe had more assists and a few other things, like more dribbles and stuff, but what people were hyping up were the goals, and then Mbappe was, you know, this Ballon d'Or winner, the golden boy, worth 300 million euros, and then it was like, yeah, Cutrone is probably decent and has a good future, and now we're accepting offers as low as 25 million, you know? So I think there's a lot of ways to inflate prices, and I don't think we have any of that going for us as Milan in the moment. I know that was kind of a rant, and I forgot the second. I just muted myself. How much of that did you get? I'm so sorry.
I got the bit about you didn't hear the second part of the question.
Okay. Yeah, yeah. It was what team he went to, right?
Uh-huh.
Honestly, he would. I don't think he would leave us for a Juve. I don't think he would do that, or like a Napoli or Inter. He wouldn't go to any of the other top Italy teams. I could see him going to any of the top six sides in the Premier League just because they have the money to attract a player. Probably like one of the top four teams in La Liga, but I don't see him. I don't know. I can't see him going to like a Sevilla or an Atletico Madrid, even though he'd slot in at Atletico perfectly as a Godin replacement. But it would have to be a top caliber team that gets Champions League. There's just no other reason he would leave us. It would need to be something that attractive.
Yeah, definitely. It would. There's no doubt about it. He seems very settled here, which is obviously a massive bonus for us because he's still young, obviously. He's 23 years old. He's not even in his prime yet, really, when you think about it. He'll soon be entering his prime, don't get me wrong, but he's certainly in a position where he can afford to be patient and give Milan at least another season to get into the Champions League, and then, you know, he'll obviously be happy because he's playing in Europe's elite competition. But yeah, as for the valuation, I agree with you. I think the position that we're in at the moment means that other teams are going to know that we need to sell players, and it kind of, in that sense, drives the potential price that you can get for your best assets down a little bit. I think an offer anywhere 50 million or over would definitely be enough to bring us to the negotiating table, which is not necessarily a worrying thing, because offers get submitted for players all the time, and it's enough to start a conversation. It depends what we would look for in a deal for Romagnoli. If we were selling him to a top team, would we look for a player to come the other way? So, for example, if we sold him to Barcelona, would we say, all right, give us 40 million and Umtiti or something like that? Mm-hmm. That's obviously a massive factor. But in terms of a pure cash valuation, I think anything over 50 million would definitely be enough to turn our heads. And depending on the kind of club that it came from, it might be enough to turn Alessio's head as well.
Do we know what the offer from Chelsea was that Milan publicly denied?
I'll have a look quickly. I just googled. There was reports from a couple of different places earlier. Well, actually, just before the end of the season, saying that we'd set a 60 million euro price tag for Romagnoli, which I think is probably about right. We said just over 50 or whatever. It was 40 million. The offer from Chelsea.
Because how much should we buy him for? Either 20 or 25?
25. We bought him for 25. 25,
okay. That's almost double the profit. So back then, honestly, for 40 million, I would have definitely listened to that offer back then. Not now, but definitely back then.
He's so important to us, isn't he? That's the thing. There's two ways to look at it, in the sense that what's he worth as a player when you remove all the background information, you know, in terms of ability and in terms of age and all the other mitigating factors, 50, 60 million is probably about right as a valuation. But in terms of how important he is to this team and what he brings, and how well adapted he is to this league and how well loved he is by the fans and stuff like that, it's probably double that. You know, there'd be people who complained if we didn't get 100 million for him. Mm-hmm. Because not everybody, unfortunately, can be quite as objective. It's interesting because obviously you hear rumours about, for example, Harry Maguire going to Man United for 90 million. Koulibaly apparently will take a 110 million bid to leave Napoli, despite the fact that he's 3 years older than Romagnoli? Fantastic defender, best in the league, in my opinion, don't get me wrong.
Oh, yeah, I'd put him top 4 or 5 in the world, definitely.
Yeah, he's incredible. And the other rumours that are going around, even stuff, obviously, because what we get the most exposure to here, but Wan-Bissaka from Crystal Palace, yes. He's a fullback, not directly comparable, but after one good season where he didn't even play every game, talking about him going to United for 55 million. So there are various factors that can drive up prices, such as desperation of other teams, you know.
Right.
I think Juve are going to be that desperate soon. I think obviously when Chiellini and Bonucci start to really tail off, they're gonna need.
I heard they aren't they getting Delight?
Yeah, but we know how that's gone over the last couple of weeks. You know, he's been about to sign for Barca, then he's agreed a deal with United, and then it's PSG, and now it's Juve. So we'll see how that develops. I personally still see him ending up at Barcelona.
I hope he goes to Barca or PSG. As long as it's not Juve, I don't give a fuck. Honestly, yeah, I know it's not going to be us, so just keep him out of our league.
Yeah, that's very true.
But the offer I saw from Juve was supposedly like 70 million euros to Ajax, which I feel would be hard for them to turn down. And then it was 20 million euros a season for the player, which is insane. I mean, Ronaldo's getting more than that, but no one else, you know. For a 19-year-old, that's just wild money. So that I feel like that would be really hard to turn down if that's true. I don't remember who reported it. It was like a decent source. It wasn't a bad one, but definitely wasn't like a rock solid one. So I can't remember who.
Oof, that's a lot of money.
Yeah,
that is a lot of money. So it's like 300,000 a week or something like that. I can't really work it out. But yeah, I think the thing is that it's very rare that you get a player, particularly one so young. Obviously, he's only 19. Where all are. A lot of the elite clubs are in the running. So this is basically going to become a bidding war. This is amazing for Ajax, don't get me wrong, because you know they're gonna net some substantial money from this. It'll hurt, don't get me wrong, because obviously he's a boyhood fan of the club and stuff like that, but sometimes you've got to kind of bite the bullet. And the player as well will know that in order to win major trophies and to go down as one of the greats, he will unfortunately have to leave Ajax. But he will go, if he goes for a deal of 70 million plus, he'll go with everyone's best wishes, and he'll have done good for his club in a financial sense, as well as obviously giving them that run to the semi-final, or helping with that.
Right, I mean, Ajax knows from a sporting perspective, obviously they got the semis, did they win the Dutch League? I can't remember, did they come up second?
Yeah,
they did,
it was really tight, but they won. Yeah.
And then PSV won their cup, or something like that, I can't remember, there was one that they lost. But, so they're right there, I mean, they just need that little extra boost to take it to the final level. Obviously, he's a totem for them, a talisman, you know, one of their best players. But you look at the Coutinho situation with Liverpool. He left on a big fee. Fans were just distraught over it. But then they brought in all these massive players, and they just won the Champions League. So if Ajax, you know, wants to follow that, they absolutely can. And they already started today. They announced Quincy Promise from Sevilla, which... Does that mean David Neres is on his way out? Maybe. I know we were linked with him. Obviously, I don't think we're going to get him anymore. But, yeah, it'll be interesting to see what happens with Ajax for sure.
Yeah, I think Neres will probably go. He's been linked with Inter. But we'll see if he's kind of a one-season wonder or whatever. Ziyech has also been linked with an exit as well. It seems to be a bit of not a fire sale, but obviously when you consider De Jong's already gone, Van der Beek, they could probably get good money for him. And I said that we should maybe look at signing him for our holding midfielder position.
I agree. I think that would be someone worth looking into. Probably price tag high right now. I feel like every Ajax player is at a premium.
Yeah, without a doubt. They know that they can command. And obviously the more, once one extra player gets sold, they can demand more for the next player because they say, oh, come on, we just sold whoever, you know, we're not going to sell this guy unless you give us 60 million for Van der Beek or whatever, which, you know, the academy that they have there, they're probably just pumping them out every year. But speaking of midfielders, seems like Sensi's going to Inter. This one I feel like I shouldn't be annoyed by, given the Torreira stuff, which we'll discuss in a minute or so.
It doesn't bother me at all.
Yeah, you're not bothered?
Mm-mm. I've never believed the hype with Sensi, to be honest. I mean, I'm not saying he's a bad player, but I don't think he's the next coming to Pirlo. You know, he's like, okay, cool, but if he goes to Inter, I'm not too worried. I don't think it's going to improve them much, if any, and I don't think he's really going to be like a starting player often. Unless Nainggolan just fucks off completely, which every season it looks like he's about to, you know, drink his life away over the summer. So maybe that happens. Who knows? But I don't think Sensi's anything to be sad over.
Yeah, I would have been annoyed perhaps if everything was saying that we were considering signing Sensi as a starter, basically as a depth option. I was okay with the idea of us going after him, especially if it was for a fee like 15 million when you consider his age. And he's not a bad little player, a very sort of well-rounded kind of midfielder. He isn't too dissimilar to Torreira in a way, but tends to play more as a natural central midfielder rather than a holding midfielder. But no, he's pretty good on the ball, you know, low centre of gravity. He's not bad as a well-rounded player, but yeah, I'm not gutted to lose out to Inter on this. Another player that we look set to miss out on it is Jordan Veretout. He seems to be going to Roma because they've offered more. This one's been like all over the place. You know, one day we're in the lead, the next day it's Roma, then we've matched Roma's offer and the player wants to join us, and then it's like, no, Roma, I don't know what's been going on there, to be honest. But you know, is this another one where you're like, eh?
This is the one that I would say is worth being bummed out about if we lose to Roma. Roma need a midfielder arguably as much as we do right now. I mean, where did they finish? Eighth? I mean, they're falling apart. So, I know they finished seventh. Lazio was eighth, but they won the cup. That's why. Okay. Yeah. So, I mean, Roma's right there, but they're, out of the money, so to speak. And we need a midfielder. I think Veretout is fantastic. I actually wanted him, in January when we first relinked with him. I thought that was a great call. He would start over Kessie, in my opinion, for us. So if Kessie leaves and we get Torreira, you know, Veretout would make perfect sense. That would, it's my midfield three based off targets right now would be, I'd put Bonaventura or Çalhanoğlu on the left with Torreira in the middle and Veretout on the right, with Kessie leaving. That would be ideal for me, but I don't think it's going to happen. It sounds like Roma's going to get him.
Yeah, the report came from Calcio Mercato earlier today, saying that they've found an agreement with the player at 2.5 million per season, which is actually pretty cheap in salary terms. But Maldini is set to make a phone call with Mario Giuffrida of, I think that's Veretout's agent, okay. Set to have a phone call with him later today, so this evening. Whether that's happened or not, we don't know. I imagine DiMarzio will offer an update in a little bit on that, but who knows, we might by tomorrow morning be back in the lead again. But I'm with you. I think, again, considering the price tag that's sort of been floated around, 15, 20 million, I think this would be a fantastic signing. We need midfield depth, basically. And for that money, you're not going to find many better players than that.
Right.
I think,
and there's something to be said about, you know, signing quality depth, too. What we had, because we had depth before. The problem was six of the players we had for depth were absolutely useless, you know? Mm-hmm. So if we could just replace that six crappy players with three decent players and three solid players, then we're in business, you know. Then we could actually play three competitions. We could compete with injuries. We could compete with fatigue, you know, these back-to-back games, things like that. That would make so much of a difference instead of having Kessie play 60 games a season and then being worn out for the last 20 of them, you know. It's a problem that we've had for many seasons, at least the better half of the past decade. It's needs to be improved, and the only way we're going to do it is if we could fork up decent money on every player. You know, I'm not saying that valuation of the player is what you want to focus on, but those players that are correctly valued about 20 million or more, that's what we need to be going for. We can't be looking at these hidden gems and hoping for the best, because if they're a bench player, they're not going to get much time, they're not going to develop. And if they're a starter and they're not the hidden gem we thought they were, then we just added more unnecessary depth. So we need to find the established players and make the right moves for them. And if we got to break the bank a little bit for Veretout, I fully suggest doing it, because he's a great midfielder. We need one. And if he's staying in the league, going to a rival, that's only going to hurt us more than if we don't sign anyone.
Yeah, definitely. That's a good point as well about signing quality depth. It stops us having a situation where we go into a Europa League game with Jose Mauri as our starting defensive midfielder, basically.
Exactly.
Obviously, Bertolacci and Montolivo have left on freeze, so it doesn't necessarily free up transfer budget. It's not like they've been sold. However, the wage budgets, you know how it works.
Massive.
Those who play career mode,
Montolivo,
you can shift the lever one way or another to allocate those funds accordingly. And you look at Radek Krunic, for example, a very astute signing considering the season that he had last season for one of the worst teams in the division. And we've picked him up for, what, about €8 million? I mean, that is such a low-risk investment, and he provides...
Have we announced him yet? I know no. He took his medical. We saw that, but...
No, he's set to be announced soon, but like anything, it's imminent. I imagine he's on holiday. Or he's sort of done his medical and will go for a break or something like that, because we don't report back to preseason for a little bit yet.
So, just to throw this out there, Mowry makes $1.5 million a season, Bertolacci $2 million, and Montolivo $2.5 million. So all three of them right there leaving just freed up $6 million in wages, which is pretty substantial. Mm-hmm. And looking at some of the other people that were leaving, Helilovic, I think he's gone permanently now. He made $1.5 million, which doesn't make any sense to me at all. Making more than Cutrone, making a flat million, Calabria $1.1 million. So there's people that are leaving that are going to free up so much wage. That's crazy for us. Wow. I'm just looking at it right now. It's shocking. Abate, 2.3. He's gone. So, I mean, we've almost freed up $10 million in just wages alone this season. Bakayoko was making 3.5. Obviously, that was a loan that we're not going to redeem. Mm-hmm. If Biglio leaves, he's also at 3.5. So, Higuain was 9.5. I mean, he's obviously gone. So we have a shit ton of free money for wages right now that was already allocated that we get to reallocate. So it doesn't make any sense to not be going for these players. I mean, all those wages is almost enough to sign him from the club before we pay him. So I don't see why we wouldn't.
Yeah, and a lot of the targets that we're linked with will not be on astronomical wages, you know, like Higuain was, for example. So if you sort of throw all of the saved wages into just one big pot, then you can take a chunk of that out to go towards transfer fees, and you can take, you know, you can allocate the rest for players like Veretu, who are only going to want $2.5 million a season, for example. So it's encouraging. It's definitely encouraging. It gives us a proper chance this summer to kind of get rid of the deadwood and overhaul the squad. You know, for example, players like Gustavo Gomez are on the way out, who many people had forgotten about. And Zapata's going. It looks like he's going to Genoa, by the sounds of it.
Mm.
So I'm kind of happy with that. Because I've nothing but respect for him, really. Obviously, he gave us that amazing moment in the derby, and it's good to see him stay in Serie A. But you just know he's going to score against us next season now. But anyway...
96 minute.
Oh, mate, don't. We'd become just a laughing stock if we're not already. One midfielder anyway. This is the one that the most talks about. And I really like this, more for the idea of sort of pinching Arsenal's best player, or, you know, one of their best players outside of Aubameyang and Lacazette. Lucas Torreira, there's reports that have come out today saying that he's asked his agents to try and get him a move to Milan, but Arsenal, understandably, are kind of playing hardball on the whole situation and don't want to sell. There's been reports in the papers that we made an initial 2-year loan offer with an option to buy at the end of that, and, you know, I don't know how much to read into all that kind of stuff. It strikes me as the kind of deal that Arsenal would just instantly reject. But
mm-hmm.
Where do you think this one's going? Is, you know, we dismissed it out of hand a couple of weeks ago, but there seems to be now a lot more smoke to this.
Yeah, I mean, in my opinion, I think Elliot knows that every summer a club gets a lot of revenue. They're stock values increase, they get more jersey sales, the excitement, more ticket sales. So much money comes from making a marquee signing that even if we have to splash 50 million euros on Torreira, it'll give us so much residual on top of his sporting performance that money's going to be made back quicker than the 8 million from Rade or whatever his name is, you know?
Mm-hmm.
No one saw that and was like, wow, I'm going to buy a season ticket because of him. But with Torreira, they might. And that's something that doesn't get spoken about, in my opinion, about marquee signings. It needs to be done. We need at least one big name. I mean, this whole summer we've said, as far as the club, not you and I, but the club has said, the midfield is the focus. And absolutely it should be. That's what we've needed for the last 5 years. And if we've put all of our transfer budget, I believe it was either 80 million, or there was rumors that we were going to try and get it up to 100 million. If we put half of it into Torreira and then, 25 here and there for two other people, that's solid to me. That's enough. Now, realistically, we're going to have some departures as well, so that might not be doable, just depending on what depth looks like. But I think it's worth it, man. I think we go for it. He knows Gianpaolo. He knows the system. He was an animal his final couple seasons here. Didn't do as well in Arsenal, and he said he doesn't like it as much as he liked Italy. So I think it's very possible. I think it's worthwhile. Plus, seeing Arsenal fans sweat is like my favorite pastime. So make it happen.
I did a bit of stat comparison between Torreira in that 2017-18 season when he was at Samp and Veretout, Sensi and Denis Payet, who we were sort of, well, linked with or have been linked with in recent weeks. Torreira comes out on top of all the other three in most of the key stats defensively and, in terms of interceptions, tackles, recoveries, passing percentage, all that kind of stuff. He comes out on top in all of those, which shows exactly the kind of player he can be in the right system and under the right manager. And if he did that at Sampdoria that season when they weren't particularly impressive, they had a decent season. But he could surely do it here where he's got better players around him. He's getting the ball fed by Romagnoli and probably another centre back, which we'll come on to, but and the quality of players that he would have in front of him as well suggests to me that he could go on and have an even better season. I think every article that I've read about this, it's all Gianpaolo's pushing for him. He wants this to be sort of his signing. This
It's
is
like
the
sorry with
player.
Jorginho last season.
Exactly. This is the player that can help him put his stamp on this squad. And I think he's probably saying to Maldini and to all the leadership, basically, look, if you make this happen, I'll prove it to be a worthwhile buy. And that's why we're going ahead with it.
And when you get a new coach, people need to realize their job is not to build off of what's already there. They have their own system. You need to implement your own system. Otherwise, you're just doing the other guy's job who just got fired. So he needs to put in his system. He needs his players to do that. And if for him, Traore is that talisman to unlock the rest of his play, then our management needs to do everything in their power to make that happen. Sarri was on that warpath to get Jorginho with the same philosophy that this is the guy that unlocks everything for me. And they eventually made it happen, and they had a fantastic season, in two finals, winning Europa League and finishing third. It's the parallels are so obvious. I don't see why we wouldn't do this for him, because we can't give him a player like Lucas Biglia and be like, okay, well, implement your new system with these guys that have only played a 4-3-3 that didn't even do that too well. So, we got to do what he wants. He's the guy, we're backing him. So, we put up or shut up, and get the guys he wants.
100%. If you back a manager enough to, or if you back somebody enough to make them the manager of your club, you've got to give them total control. And also, you've got to remember that Gianpaolo was Maldini's pick. So, in theory, everything's going to work in conjunction. They will have the same ideas about how they want this squad to look. And I can't imagine anybody at the club will really be dead against signing Torreira if a deal turns out to be doable. My worry about this in particular is Arsenal, because they realise that they can't lose a player like that. The obvious solution, if we're talking again in sort of FIFA career mode terms, is to send Kessié there as the swap, perhaps. I know if Maddie was with us now, he'd be shouting at us saying Kessié can't leave. But in terms of what we need, we definitely need a holding midfielder, and Arsenal would need to replace Torreira, so it kind of makes more sense to do that. But I don't know. I don't know if they, I don't know if they sell him, basically. I think he's too important to them.
Well, you mentioned something pre-podcast recorded when you and I were just talking. Something, a counterpart to give Arsenal that kind of makes sense because they were linked today to him, but Ricardo Rodriguez. If there were four clubs linked to him, Arsenal is one of them. If we say, we'll give you Ricardo Rodriguez and 35 million or whatever the number is, for Torreira, I can see him possibly accepting that. They get a player they want, they get money on top of it to reinvest into the position they just lost. So I could see that being a possibility for them. Plus, obviously, Gazidis has pretty strong relations with Arsenal. I'm sure he could be like, come on, guys, throw me a bone, you know?
Mm-hmm. Or maybe they hate him because he jumped ship.
It didn't seem like he left on bad terms. I mean, he could have. I don't follow Arsenal too much. But it didn't seem like he left on bad terms.
I think he left Arsenal to join us.
He did.
So that can't really go down that well, surely. Unless he was sort of being pushed anyway. Then right. Perhaps, but no, I agree with the Rodriguez thing, and the thing about including a player going the other way is that it, in theory, wouldn't hit our salary, because you're trading a wage for a wage.
Right.
He's on reportedly 70 to 75 grand a week at the moment. Is Torreira, so you know, Rodriguez must be on a similar amount, so there wouldn't be much of a hit in that sense. It would just be whatever the cash sum is. So that makes sense from our point of view, but we'll see. Speaking of Rodriguez on his way out, a player that we have been linked with very intensely in the last few days is Theo Hernandez from Real Madrid. Do you know much about him?
I know he came from Atletico. I think they bought him for like 25 million, and he didn't do too hot, and they loaned him out, and he didn't do too hot on the loan either. I think he would just be kind of a Strinich that I would compare him to a Strinich that has room to grow. I feel like Strinich is kind of capped out, whereas Theo could potentially get better, but I don't see him becoming like the guy that we want at left back, you know. And I feel like maybe I'm wrong, because I feel like Maldini would know a good left back, and if he's the one looking into him, talking about it, I'm gonna trust Maldini's football knowledge over mine. So you know what? Fuck it, bring him in.
Yeah, that's the interesting thing about all this to me, is that people have kind of skipped on the fact that it's Maldini who's flown out to Ibiza. He loves Ibiza, doesn't he, Maldini? To meet with Theo, and he's the one who seems to be doing the charm offensive, so to speak.
I'll tell you, there's no young left back that meets Maldini and doesn't want to do anything he tells them.
That's
every left
true.
Back's idol is Maldini.
I think Maldini could have slid a £10,000 a week contract over, and he'd have probably signed it there and then. But
oh yeah,
do you know what I like about this is the formula of the deal? A season long loan with a pretty low option to buy at the end of it. It's so risk free for us, and if Rodriguez does want to go. Does want to go to Arsenal, or he does want to return to the Bundesliga, then it means that we've got a direct replacement lined up, and Laxalt slash Strinich, you know, whoever it may be, can still do a job in the games where we may need rotation. So, I'm for it if the formula that's being reported is correct. Just a couple quickly then to end. We got links with Daniele De Rossi today. He's a holding midfielder, and we do need one, but, you know, this for me is a non-starter. What about you?
Yeah, I think the whole idea is nonsense. I think it'd be cool for him to come in and be like a technical coach under Gianpaolo's staff. I believe there was talk of that happening as well, but to be playing for us, I mean, we all saw how he was at Roma the last few seasons. He just wasn't starting games, and when he was, it was like a decent performance, but I mean, the guy's going to be 36 years old really soon here. We need a replacement because our current guy is 32, 31, and on the decline. Mm-hmm. We know De Rossi is on the decline. We know he's slower than a bag of rocks. I mean, there's no reason to bring him in unless it's for him to retire and become a coach. But I know he wants to play, so I think a lower club would be better for him. Like, honestly, a Sampdoria would probably fit him pretty well, but there's no reason for us to be getting a player like that.
No, I agree with you. Obviously, he has been a fantastic player without a doubt. Last couple of years, like you say, he's been winding down his career. Been immensely instrumental for both Roma and for Italy. But the report of it being a one-year deal as a player, and then he would take up a role as a technical collaborator, so like a, you know, on the coaching staff.
Oh, kind of like what Reina's doing.
Correct, yeah, I like that. I do actually like
Okay,
that.
I didn't know that was the terms of it. I thought it was like one or the other. If that's the case, then yes, because as long as he knows that he's not going to play much. Exactly.
Mm.
That would work. So if that's the case, if it's a one-year playing and he's okay with just playing maybe some like the Frosinones or like the early Coppa Italia games, then sure. But as long as he's not a starter, I just don't want him to start.
I think he just wants to go to a club and feel valued, because obviously his exit from Roma was far from perfect, let's put it that way. It became very clear that he'd kind of been pushed out, which I think, you know, there's probably a whole other episode you can have about this, but I think club legends sometimes feel like they're owed a bit too much by the club. I think it's up to them to know when it's time to call it quits and not hold out for the golden handshake, so to speak.
Right. I completely agree with you on that. But on the other side, I feel like De Rossi is one of the few exceptions. He's been at Roma since 2000. That's 20 years. You know, he has over 500 appearances with them. You know, he's never been to any other club. I feel like he is allowed to ask for a bit more from Roma than say, a player that's been at a club for 5 years, you know, or even 10 years, honestly. I feel like there's a difference between a club legend that needs to know when to quit and a guy that's really dedicated his entire life to him. He's 35. He's been there since he was 15. You know,
he's probably seen how his best mate or one of his best mates in Totti has been treated and thought, no, I'm not having that. I'm going to...
And I think a part of that is why De Rossi's leaving. Because Totti left and then was bashing Roma the same day, you know?
Mm-hmm.
There obviously is some bad blood between those guys and the current regime, which not that has changed that much recently, but they clearly don't see eye to eye. And yeah, I don't know. That one's tough. I feel like they did right by Totti to give him that job once he retired, but clearly something went wrong, and I think De Rossi's just saying, fuck it. Like, I'm not going to be part of this.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So in terms of that, in terms of him coming to Milan, if the terms are correct, I like that. 1 year as a player, you know, can help out where needed. Slots in as a bit of midfield depth, and he can still do a job. But the idea of him graduating onto the coaching and sort of, you know, really being able to help the young players come along, and the young players obviously respect him massively, I think, yeah, I'm all for that. I'm all for it. Be cool to kind of reunite him with Maldini as well. You know, obviously they played so much for Italy together. It'd be nice to have a sort of dream team back. Yes, that's De Rossi. And then finally, Ozan Kabak. Now, kind of a last but not least, because he seems to be the one that we're now closest to next getting over the line. We had an exclusive on site from Vito Angeli, which is worth checking out, saying that we met with the player's entourage today. Told him that he was going to be an important part of the project moving forward. We're willing to offer a 4 or 5 year contract or a long-term contract with a view to him becoming a starter in time. He only has a 15 mil release clause. I asked someone who watches German football what he's like, and he said he's good, and he can see why Bayern Munich are interested. I'd like to win the race for this because, again, at 15 million, it's such a low-risk investment for somebody who's so highly rated.
And we need the depth. Zapata just left. Abate just left. Caldar is injured. Conte's always injured. You know, there's so many variables with us. We can't rely on Musacchio for an entire season. We know that. He's just, honestly, in my opinion, too short to be a good center back. I mean, he's fine, but he makes mistakes, and he doesn't have any aerial prowess whatsoever. So we need someone better. That was Caldara. Caldara is injured. Now we don't know if we could rely on him because he hasn't returned. We don't know how he's going to be. So $15 million for the Bundesliga Rookie of the Year, someone fairly highly rated that's, you know, a career mode superstar or whatever you want to call it. But it seems like a no-brainer to me. All the big clubs want him. I think if it wasn't for the, you know, big media storm over De Ligt, that all those clubs would also be after him.
Mm-hmm.
Just based off of, you know, stats and everything else. I mean, Bayern want him, and all Bayern does is raid fucking German clubs for their diamonds, you know. So
yeah, and they've already agreed a pre-contract with Pavard, who's the other Stuttgart center back.
Right. So, well, and they got rid of Hummels. He just went to Dortmund.
Yeah,
back to.
Correct.
So they obviously need someone. I think we swoop in. We activate this clause. We've given an improved contract offer. I don't think there's any issue with our contract and what we're going to do with the club. And I don't think there's any issue with Bayern's contract and what they're going to do with the club. I think we're both in agreement. It's whoever he accepts first. That's who
I think
gets him. And
I think
the unfortunate thing is the last couple of days we've been hearing the same thing, that he'll give an answer in the next couple hours, but it's been like a week, so we'll see what happens.
Yeah, I think that's purely, that will be purely the player's agent just trying to get as many teams involved as possible.
Of course.
All clubs will be willing to trigger that 15 mil release clause because it's pocket change nowadays, especially for obviously Europe's elite clubs. But it's whoever convinces most with the project, and honestly, we've got Maldini, so you've got to hope that he can manage to convince him. It wouldn't surprise me, though, if Bayern somehow ended up winning that race.
Me either.
But we'll see. There are other targets knocking about. It's kind of gone quiet on Anderson. Roma are a team that have apparently gone in for him, but can't seem to get a deal over the line. It's gone quiet on Gianluca Mancini as well, stuff like that. I mean, there's players out there. There's good defenders that are going to be available, you know.
I think we've gone quiet on all those guys because they're all rated between 20 and 25, whereas this dude is, or what was, 15 million is his release. So, yeah, that's probably the main reason. And it sounds like his wage is pretty cheap. What did we offer, 2 million or something like that? Which, I mean, is a good amount, but I think the other guys wanted about between 3 and 4 or something like that.
Yeah, yeah, that's probably about right. So, yeah, we'll see how that one develops as well. I don't think... I think that's it for rumours. There's not really been anything close to getting over the line just yet. But in a week's time, I think we'll have a few more updates on that front, especially now the sporting director has been officially announced. We've got time to quickly answer a couple of questions. Acknowledge that we're over an hour now. So we've discussed most of the other players that Mirglass 97 mentions here, but one that we didn't really touch on is Dani Ceballos. Got a little bit cold on him in the last couple of days, but this would be a good signing, surely.
Oh yeah. Yeah, if our midfield could turn into Ceballos, Veretout, and Torreira, oh my god. With De Rossi and as a backup, That's nice. I like that a lot.
Yeah, that would be really good. He's been fantastic for Spain at the under-21 Euros. And he's actually a Spain international, basically. He's only playing in that because he qualifies still. Most recent reports have suggested that Arsenal are after him, which is quite funny. Does that mean that they're kind of preparing for a midfielder to leave?
Right.
Wink, wink, nudge, nudge. Apparently Real Madrid have set a 50 mil asking price. Only problem with this is the more teams that get wind of his availability, the higher his price is going to go.
I think we offered a good formula. It was like a 2-year loan that we would have an option to buy on, and we would pay all of his wages, which are 4.5, so pretty high for Madrid. But I think that's a great formula to win him over. And then after the 2 years, you know, maybe we could actually afford that release clause and those wages. Mm-hmm. But for now, we're just kind of saying, like, yeah, we'll do it, and then might not. You know, I feel like a lot of clubs do that with their loans. They just throw in the option to buy to smooth the deal over, but they never have an intention of actually using it, which we saw with Sevilla and Andre Silva. You know, they were never activating that clause. They basically made it clear a week after he signed. So,
way of persuading a team to accept a loan, really.
Right.
Is the sort of hope of getting a nice lump sum further down the line, because the thing that you got to remember as well is that a player's sort of clause or option to buy fee is set based on what they're worth at that moment, not what they're worth in a year's time. So Bakayoko, you could argue he's worth more than 35 million after the season that he had. You could argue 35 million's right. You could say after his first couple of months with the club that 15 million would have been more accurate. The beauty is that the valuation of that player can change, so it's kind of a way to deal with the uncertainty. What Mirglass asks is, and this is just a quick fire, percentage chances of signing each of the following. So we'll start with Ceballos.
30%.
Yeah, I was going to go 25. Okay. Don't know what will happen. I think Real Madrid will probably...
I think he leaves Madrid for sure.
Yeah, I think
I just don't know if it's us.
I think he leaves on loan, though. I think he probably leaves to a team in Spain still. Don't know who. Maybe like a Sevilla or something like that, but...
Yeah.
Kabak?
I'd say like 90. I think it's almost a done deal.
I'll say 70. I think Bayern will still have a say in that. But yeah, I'm happy with how intent we are on that, and the faith that we're showing to try and get the deal over the line should be enough to persuade him. Torreira?
That's the one I want, and if you would have asked me maybe a week ago, I probably would have said 10%. But I think things are kind of shifting in our favor, so I'm going to go with 30% on that one also.
Yeah, I will go with... I'll stick with 25% on that one too. I just think he's too important to Arsenal for them to consider selling. But perhaps in a year, that's something that we could definitely revisit. If we're willing to sort of wait a year and we don't go for somebody else. And finally, Theo Hernandez.
Probably pretty high. I'd probably say like 75, 80.
Yeah, I'll say 50 at the moment. An update could announce.
Could arrive tonight.
Could arrive tonight from Dimarzio. And a new name could come up altogether. You know, we were linked with Mario Rui, El Said Hisaj, however you say it. So yeah, that's pretty much it. Anything you want to add before we wrap this up? Christ, we're on an hour and 15.
Yeah, no, I think we covered everything we possibly could have covered.
See, it's easy to sort of set out to do quick fire Mercato rumours and stuff like that, but there is genuinely a lot of points of interest on each player. But it's exciting times, man. It's keeping the site busy.
Yeah,
I'll throw a special shout out at this point to Vito Angele, who's been doing a lot of transfer exclusives for us. He's very switched on. He was obviously the first to kind of break the news that Milan are interested in hiring Gianpaolo. That was back on May 27th, I believe. And now here he is as our new manager. You know, he's got a couple of other things right as well. So yeah, definitely check out his stuff when it comes live on site. And in the meantime, be sure to download our app as well. It's available on the Google Play and the Apple Store. And, you know, there's a nice little news tab on that so you can keep up to date with all the latest news in the Mercato over the summer. But yeah, thank you for joining us for another action-packed episode. We'll be back in a week's time, hopefully with Madison with us this time. But in the meantime, I've been your host, Oliver Fisher. You can find me on Twitter at Ollie Fisher or at Kilpin Chronicle for some more explicit Milan-based rants. And I've been joined by Anthony Talkrude.
Yeah, I had a lot of fun today. Glad to have a nice long discussion. And like Ollie said, you know, we'll try to have Madison back next week. And yeah, it's been awesome. You can follow me on Twitter at Stuttgart45. Thanks for listening.
Yes, thank you very much for listening, everybody. We will catch you in a week's time. Goodbye.
Abate la rimette dentro. Esce Radu. Porta vuota. Gol! Gol! Abbiamo battuto il gatto nero! Li abbiamo battuti tutti, Alessio! Grande Alessio! È bella la vita! Lava quella zolla, Alessio! Lava la quella zolla, Alessio!